We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovic. Joining me today is Doug Casey, founder of Casey Research, author of several books, including Crisis Investing, Assassin, Speculator, and the International Man blog. He also has a YouTube channel titled Doug Casey's Take. How are you today, Doug?
Pretty good, Tom. It's a nice day. So how can I not be good if the weather's good? But wait a minute. That's just the weather outside. The political and financial and economic weather, they're not quite so good.
Absolutely. A little ray of optimism from you, Doug. That's a little bit of a nice change, but we'll get into all the negative stuff, I'm sure.
No. Listen, I'm intensely optimistic. I believe in the ascent of man. It's been going on for thousands of years, and hopefully will continue and even accelerate. And if I can say that, I've got to be an optimist, basically.
Well said. So, Doug, I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about terms that we often use and how we think about them. Of course, we've seen the redefinition of recession and inflation this year, but maybe if you could start with GDP and how you would typically think that a rise in GDP would be a good thing. Are there cases where we could be better off overall and yet have GDP collapse?
Well, I question the validity of the measures of GDP to start with. Look, there are so many things that are counted as part of GDP that are not production at all. For instance, all of the government employees out there, well, not all of them, but many of them are doing things that are not only non-productive, but counterproductive. I mean, all these little weevils sitting in their cubicles, filling out forms and telling people what to do and making actual production harder, but they're counted as part of the GDP. Their salaries count. For instance, the 87,000 new IRS agents that the Biden regime is hiring. Mm-hmm. Well, they're pure destruction. But their salaries are going to be added to the GDP. There are a lot of things like that. Generally, government things, directly or indirectly, where people are paid to dig holes during the day and other people are paid to fill them in at night. Both of them add to GDP, but neither add anything to net wealth. So I've got to get that out of the way before saying anything else. The big problem that we have in our society is the huge presence of the state. It's gone from being, providing a few worthwhile services like police, courts, small military, good, that's fine, to basically owning and controlling directly and indirectly the economy. That's created tremendous distortions and misallocations of capital in the society. And when those things get unwound and we return to a sustainable economy, I hate to use that word, sustainable. It's become corrupt like so many other things today and overused. There's a lot of people that are doing things today that will no longer be required. A lot of people are going to have to change their occupations, lose their jobs. So I don't know if that's a direct enough answer to your question, but I thought it was important to say.
Absolutely. Maybe instead of sustainable economy, maybe we should say it as more of a market-driven economy. You know, I was chatting with a friend earlier this week about, let's say, the PayPal situation, where they reacted to quote unquote misinformation by saying that you were going to get, they could penalize you up to $2,500 or something like that. And all of a sudden the market actually reacted and kind of called them out on it. And everybody started deleting their accounts. And, you know, very quickly they went back on that. And I actually got an email this week saying that they would give you $50 or something to refer some type of new account. So do you think that we're starting to see some of the inklings of the free market re-exerting its will here?
Yeah, I guess we are. yeah, I guess we are. But the people that are in control of the apparatus of the state in both Ottawa and Washington, D.C., they're genuine Jacobins. I mean, these people have the same philosophy, the same outlook on life, the same views. They're the same people reincarnated, as we saw in France after the revolution, and they're not going away. And they've spread to outfits like Facebook and PayPal and so many more. They're actually minions of the state at this point. I don't support any of them, quite frankly. I don't have a PayPal account. I'm not planning on getting one, even if they try to bribe me with $50 or something like that to get one. But is there a reaction from Joe Average? Listen, I got so much respect for the Canadian truckers, but look what happened to them. I mean, they were actively punished. I mean, they were treated like criminals, and the Canadian government treated them the way PayPal threatens to treat its customers. So I don't know if I can be very optimistic about the situation. Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to what you were talking about the IRS agents. Do you think the federal government is getting, you know, in some ways desperate to collect that tax revenue? And is it possible that they will actually be able to offset their collective salaries by the amount of taxes that they can collect?
Yeah. Yeah. What are these 87,000 new IRS agents, which is a doubling of the size of the IRS? You know, what are they going to do? Are they going to be going after rogue centimillionaires and billionaires? I don't think so. And of course, the lower classes that are basically collecting welfare or, you know, making minimum wage or something like that, there's not a lot of water that can be squeezed out of that stone. So it's actually an attack on the middle class. And the middle class is what makes Western civilization what it is. So it's a direct attack on the part of the powers that be on the middle class. So that I don't know what's to be done about it, quite frankly, because you know, once the government goes after you for alleged taxes, I mean, you've got to hire your own lawyer. They can bankrupt you. They can do all kinds of things to you. So the whole system has got to change at this point. But I'm afraid it's not going to change until we have something that resembles a collapse and a revolution. But I'm not looking forward to that, because after you have a collapse and a revolution, things usually get worse, not better. And an example of that, I just mentioned France in their revolution. God, it was great to get rid of Louis XVI and, you know, all these criminal hangers-on. But then what happened? Then they got the Directory and Robespierre, and then they got Napoleon that compounded the disaster. So things got worse than they were before the revolution. Same thing happened in Russia. It was great to get rid of Nicholas II. But then what happened? They got Lenin. And then it got worse. They got Stalin. So that I'm not looking forward to a revolution overturning the corrupt deep state that we have throughout the West, throughout Europe and North America at this point. It's actually quite scary.
When we have the, let's say, the government in charge of figuring out how they calculate GDP, how they define recession or inflation, does this give them the illusion of having the ability to control the economy?
Yeah, it's very funny. They used to say that they would fine-tune the economy. Remember, that was a phrase that was once used, that the Fed and the government would fine-tune the economy. An idiotic concept. Now it's totally out of control. I mean, where they're throwing hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars at the economy, and nobody even knows where all that money goes. Like $60 billion, $70 billion has been shoveled into the Ukraine. I don't even know how you can spend that much money. I mean, weapons? No, the Ukrainians don't have any magic weapons that, you know, it's all corruption. Like the most recent piece of idiocy out of Washington, it's the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. $400 billion of spending. It's actually putting what's known as modern monetary theory into effect, where the government spends $400 billion on what it wants at the top of the funnel. And they say, well, how's that going to reduce inflation where you're adding that much money? Because it's all borrowed money. It's all printed up by the Fed now. It's not even tax revenue anymore. It's not even real borrowing from places like China. It's all printed money from the Fed now. So how's it inflation reduction? Well, that's what those 87,000 new agents are about. They're going to take that money out of the society that's put in by the government, take it out of the productive area of society through the IRS. It's dangerous and criminal, and it's turning the U.S. into a police state. And I'm afraid that Canada is further down the path than the U.S. is at this point. It's actually very scary, especially when we stand at the edge of a financial precipice, because all the markets are still grossly overpriced. And when the markets fall, when the financial system goes under, the economic system is going to have real problems. And then the political system is going to have problems because, you know, the average person has come to look at the government as a cornucopia, and he's going to look for a strong man, say, do something, to a Mussolini. Or Hitler to come along and say, I can solve these problems. Just give me a little bit of power. And then we're in for real trouble. So where am I wrong? I mean, what am I missing here?
Well, considering your broad grasp on history, Doug, I think you're probably more informed than the average person, for sure.
Yeah, well, It's I'm a believer in black humor, gallows humor, if you will. So it's seeing the ridiculousness of what's going on helps me to have a happy day. I feel a little bit like at the end of Monty Python's Life of Brian, always looking at the bright side of life. Remember that song at the very end of the movie? So, yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, a large part of that is going to be spent on green energy. So how much do you think this move towards, let's say, a less efficient energy source contributes or exacerbates the financial problems that we're facing?
Oh, hugely. This this move towards green energy. Listen, I'm not opposed to windmills and solar panels. They can be great for some applications, some places, sometimes, no problem. But as the mainstay of power generation for an industrial society, they are not just a bad idea, they're an insane idea. A complete misallocation of capital that's going to result in a vastly lower standard of living for everybody. And it could be worse than that. What the world should be doing right now is there's nothing wrong with fossil fuels, but the world should have years ago, and this is once again government policy, it should have been using nuclear power. Where right now we have what are known as Generation 3 nuclear plants, but if we lived in a free market world, we'd already be using small, self-contained, room-sized plants that would be everywhere, safe, not needing to be touched for a decade, clean. And nuclear itself is by far the safest, the cheapest, and the cleanest form of mass power generation. Hopefully, fusion will come up and will be viable in the decade to come. Maybe it's possible, but no. Green power is a fraud and a swindle at best. And the fact that they're going to piss away a lot of that $400 billion on it, you know, on things like carbon neutral stuff, you know. There's a lot of companies out there that are now selling carbon credits, which is completely insane, complete waste, misallocation at best of capital. So, nope, that's, I hate to think about it. This is going to be so bad, in addition to the fact that, you know, ESG, environmental, social, governments, is that what these three things stand for? Plus DIE, diversity, inclusion, equity. You know, all the big corporations are rolling over like whipped dogs and having an executive or a team of executives, you know, to monitor what's being done along those lines. Universities have a dozen of these people, you know, little bed bugs that are insinuating themselves into students' lives. But the students have been so indoctrinated, I guess they like it and think it's a good idea. So the prognosis is not good for Western civilization, which is the only civilization in all the world's history that's worth anything. It's worth much more than all the rest of them put together, is being washed away. So this is going to be interesting to watch.
Interesting seems like a generous word there, Doug.
Yeah, it's like the Chinese curse.
Yeah.
You live in interesting times. Mm-hmm.
You know, as you're explaining that, it brings me back to the idea of incentives and how, let's say, free markets should work. You know, when we look at who has stood against nuclear power, a lot of the, let's say, propaganda or misinformation about it came from other energy generators. So is that, let's say, a mark against the free market where other forms of power generation have their interests aligned against something that could eat part of their lunch?
Well, look, everybody in competition likes to point out the potential downsides of somebody that might eat their lunch. And, you know, the nuclear power guys would point out the disadvantages of fossil fuels, which are real. And, you know, the thing is for the average person to use his brain and try to think logically and critically and rationally about all of these things. The problem is when they're politicized and you have the people that are elected to a Congress or a parliament making these decisions, because the people in government are not the best and the brightest. I mean, where that meme got started, it's insane. They're the poorest and worst kind of people. You got two kinds of people in the world. You've got people that like to deal in materials and stuff and atoms and, you know, create things. And that's where the, you know, that's good. That's kept us from, you know, living in mud huts and grubbing for roots and berries to live on. And then you got the other kind of people that go to work for government, and they're interested not in manipulating materials and atoms, but manipulating people. And they've sold themselves as being saviors instead of destroyers. So it's absolutely perverse. So all of these decisions should be made, if you would, democratically, by the market, where everybody gets to vote with their dollars, as opposed to devolving their power to the worst kind of people, which inhabit the halls of government, and having them make decisions, you know, because they want to control other people, you know, take bribes, be big shots. It's absolutely disgusting.
Doug, I'd like to move on to a couple of the things in the economic news that's really been kind of shaking the world markets here. England is obviously currently in the middle of defending their bonds and their pension funds. So could you see this starting to undermine confidence in assets priced in pounds, especially, you know, cross-border institutions?
Yes. We have to bear in mind that all of the world's currencies, no exceptions, are fiat currencies today. One of the nice things about the Bitcoin revolution is that it drew to people's attention what a fiat currency is. They never really thought of it before. So all these paper currencies like the British pound that can be, you know, created by fiat, just out of nothing, by these fools in government. So, yeah, they've created so many distortions over the years that lots of things, British pension funds, they're all on the ragged edge of bankruptcy. So I don't see that there's any way out of it, quite frankly. It's like these people think that the economy is like a factory where, you know, you put a little bit more coal in the furnace and it speeds up and you adjust this switch or that switch and like a Rube Goldberg machine. That's not the way it works. The economy is more like a rainforest. And there, if you come in and you do something like wipe out one species or, you know, cut away the underbrush here, it can destroy the whole thing because it's an integrated whole. That's what a market economy is. It's like a rainforest. It's not like a machine, which is the way these fools, economists, so-called, they're not economists, they're political economists, political apologists, would have the average guy believe. You know, the thing is that I think it was Mark Twain that said, the problem isn't what people don't know. That's the problem. The problem is what they think they know that just ain't so. And that's true with almost everything to do with economics and politics and things of that nature, so-called soft sciences. Well, they're not sciences to start with. But yeah, it's what people think they know that just ain't so. There's a complete lack of critical thinking in the world today. And it is accentuated and made worse by institutions of higher education. Well, forget about that. It starts in grade schools now. They've become corrupt in high schools. You don't even have to go to college to be corrupted anymore. It's very serious, but it's actually hilarious. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bovine stupidity of the average citizen, I've got no faith in the average voter. You know, about election time every year, you know, these self-righteous people come out and say, and I have faith in the average voter to do the right thing. Well, you know, the best argument against political democracy is a five-minute conversation with the average voter. I'm for economic democracy, where everybody gets to vote with his dollars mm-hmm. and with his words, but doesn't get to use coercion against his fellow citizens, which is what politics is all about.
Doug, in that vein, how do you think we go about finding our collective way out of the current problems in the world? You know, if we take the current and ever looming energy crisis in Europe, for example, do the politicians have to try every wrong answer? Like my friend Chris Iron said, do they have to try every wrong answer until they find the right one? And is it really going to take people freezing to death to finally come to that realization that maybe the green energy utopia isn't what it was promised?
Well, maybe, but on the other hand, maybe they'll say, it's the fault of these energy companies that haven't been pumping enough oil, which we've made impossible, so forth. So you can't be sure of any of this type of thing, quite frankly. I don't know. On the other hand, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, is I do believe in the ascent of man, but we may have to take two steps backwards at this point, before we can take one step forwards again. I just hope that there's not too much damage that's done by all the nonsense that's going on in the world today. And I hope these idiots don't start World War III. Over the Ukraine. I mean, it's amazing to me that what's going on in the Ukraine, which should be at most, it should have been nothing but a couple of columns on the sixth page of the paper. I mean, it's a border war between two shithole countries where border wars have been fought for 1,000 years and certainly nothing that anybody else should get involved in. Certainly nothing that you should take a chance of provoking a nuclear war or a cyber war, which would be almost as bad, or a biological war, which is, I think, the way it'll probably go, which would even be worse.
Well, Doug, it's often said that the truth is the first victim of war. So how do you try to understand, let's say, a more objective view of what's going on in the world? Do you have any preferred sources or techniques of sorting the propaganda from reality?
Well, I wish I could recommend a particular book that would, one book that would, kind of lay it all out. But I could recommend a dozen books that I think if everybody read them, they'd say, that's kind of interesting. But we don't have time to talk about a dozen books right now. The best I can do, Tom, is suggest that people, if you don't mind by putting a commercial in here, tune into my podcast on YouTube. It's still on YouTube. I'm amazing, frankly. It's called Doug Casey's Take. I do generally two of those a week. And we're doing some interesting things there, trying to organize groups to take things out of the word of talking and words and into the realm of doing. So I suggest your listeners go to Doug Casey's Take on YouTube and go to internationalman.com, which is my blog. It's free. We have great articles every day. And the last thing, I urge people to read my novels, Speculator, Drug Lord, and Assassin, so they don't get too far behind, because Terrorist is the next one coming out in The Adventures of Charles Knight.
Doug, can you give us some examples of taking things out of the realm of talking and moving them into doing?
Well, we're organizing something like that right now. They're called files, P-H-Y-L-E-S from Neal Stephenson's great sci-fi book, Diamond Age, where he coined that term. And I think that a lot of your listeners will have found that they don't have anybody they can talk to that they feel the same way about the way the world is working. And what we're trying to do is put together some groups of people that are truly like-minded and see what we can do to make things better from every point of view. Still crystallizing things, formulating them, but tune in, see if you like it.
So, Doug, what is worth paying attention to in the world today? What events are concerning you mostly? Or, you know, is it the markets, politics, international relations? What are a couple things that you think are really worth keeping an eye on or thinking about right now?
Well, you know, charity begins at home. So that I think everybody has got to make sure that their own personal financial affairs, well, that's important, financial affairs, are in order so that they're not a liability to their friends and family, but can be an asset to their friends and family, number one. Number two, maybe your current friends and family aren't so great. Maybe you ought to reach out and find people that you share values with. And of course, at least in the United States, the red people and the blue people have come to hate each other where they can't even have a Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner together anymore because politics has intervened so much. And this is, I think this is relatively new. So I think you want to find people that that you share values with, not just genes with. It's another thing to think about. And there's a lot that's more like that. So,
Doug, as we think about, let's say, getting your financial house in order, with the rise in interest rates that we've seen this year, what is your take on the markets? Every asset class seems to be crashing, except seemingly the U.S. dollar. But is that something that people aren't necessarily as worried about as maybe they should be because they have been accustomed to the Fed stepping in before the pain really gets too bad and trying to save everything?
Yeah, the reason the dollar is doing well, and it's not doing well, it's losing value against real goods at about 15% per year. It's just doing well at the moment against even crappier currencies. So what should people do? If you have a bond, I would suggest selling it yesterday morning. Certainly today, no later than tomorrow morning. Bonds are way overpriced still. They're in a hyper bubble. Stocks, way overpriced. It's been a 40-year bull market, which has been wonderful. But the average stock is still very expensive by just about every parameter out there. And this bear market's going to go quite a ways yet. Real estate in a lot of cities in North America has been in a bubble, and it floats on a sea of debt, and interest rates are going way up, whether the Fed likes it or promotes it or not. So be cautious with your real estate. And gold is reasonably valued. I mean, it's gone from $35 to $1,700 in 50 years. So, okay, it's done great. I think it's going to go higher, though, because it's the only financial asset that's not simultaneously somebody else's liability. So I think it'll become very overpriced in the future. So I like gold. I like crappy little mining stocks. Mining is a terrible business. I've been involved in it for most of my life. It's treated me very well. It's a speculative area, not an investment area, but you're forced to be a speculator today. And right now, as we speak, I think that gold stocks, and oil stocks. I'll put oil in the same class for different reasons, and natural gas stocks, and certain others, uranium. They're all really, really cheap right now. So I think it's possible to turn a dollar into a lot more than $2 in the next few years. Let's see. I think so, though. So that's the way I'd play it, broad brush.
Excellent, Doug. I think that's a reasonable place to kind of wrap up our conversation today. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
No, I think I've pretty much covered the waterfront. I hope a few folks out there buy those novels I recommended and tune into my podcast and such. Great. It's fun talking to you, Tom.
I appreciate your time very much, Doug. Of course, like you said, internationalman.com, at the real Doug Casey on Twitter, and your YouTube channel, Doug Casey's Take. Thanks so much for your time today, Doug.
Have a good one, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.